meeting to order. We're going to start off with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Board Member Massey.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'll introduce board members. To my far left is Valerie Minton. To her is Jeff Hale and David Noren. I'm John Corbett. This is Bill Massey and Greg Gustie. Now is the time for board member ex parte communications disclosure. Do any members identify any discussion they may have had requiring the disclosure pursuant to Government Code Section 11,430.5?
Mr. Chair, in the period since our last meeting, I have met with state and local officials regarding West County sewers.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have also met with them, and I have also had some conversations regarding the Sonoma County Compost Facility and stormwater.
Okay. Any further disclosures? Okay, the next item is the State Board Liaison. Was that taken care of yesterday?
No.
You know, here I thought you were paying attention to the window, but, you know, looking out the window, you're on top of it.
Just sit him right down.
Well, you have arrived at the perfect moment. Since you are on a State Board rep report.
Oh, okay. 8:30 sharp.
We're timely.
Well, hello, everyone.
Good morning.
No. We'll see. See, when you come in the room, things happen, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have a lot to share. My name's Steve Moore. I'm the liaison to the North Coast Regional Board from the State Water Board. And I actually brought some things to hand out to board members. This is a one-page cheat sheet on the water bond. You may have heard that there's this thing that was on the ballot this November. It's called Proposition 1, and it passed with 66.8% of the vote in the state of California.
Thank you.
But before we get into that, which will be one of the last things we talk about today, and so I know you're all going to look at it while I'm doing my introduction, but hold that thought. We'll get back to that. You know, it's November. It's time to reflect and express our gratitude, and I'm grateful for today's rainfall in California and the hope for relief for many people during this historic drought. I'm grateful for the North Coast region's partnership and support on statewide efforts, particularly for your staff support of the State Board's Water Rights Division's response to complaints on curtailments of water diversions in the rivers of this region, and the talents of your staff in leading efforts on multi-agency statewide marijuana task force efforts. At its November 7th meeting, the multi-agency statewide marijuana task force was focused on the details of the draft North Coast permit that addresses discharges of waste associated with marijuana cultivation, which you heard from your staff, Diana Henriol, at your last board meeting. We've come a long way in only 18 months. Right, Board Member Massey? Remember that? When you asked me what we were doing. I'll also give my gratitude for the high quality and substance of yesterday's delightful workshop on your engaging of the San Francisco Estuary Institute, the Santa Rosa Plain groundwater planning work, and the Basin Plan Triennial Review. You know, I could spend a lot of time discussing these issues with my experience in the Bay Area Board Regional Monitoring Program, the new groundwater law, my 7 years of basin planning experience. But suffice to say, I think these items are on the right track. You know, people may not know that I named the Pulse of the Bay report. we were wondering, you know, the folks were saying, what should we call this report, this annual report? Let's not call it the RMP annual report. I said, like, call it the pulse of the bay. This is the way the hydrodynamics it works. So anyway, lots of stuff, lots of history. You know, I actually, back in 04, when I was basin planner, I spearheaded this narrative update of the basin plan for the reason Chair Corbett articulated yesterday. Make them relevant, you know, make them a go-to document, an atlas of water quality. And so I just suffice this, don't worry, the State Board's not fussy about editorial updates of the basin plan. In fact, we really welcome them, and they're coming in from all regions, and it really makes the basin plan more relevant. So things have changed since, you know, 2000. I got to mention that the historical ecology work you heard about from SFEI yesterday, it has great relevance to any watershed in the state of California for development of green infrastructure, including stream and wetland restoration. And it's exciting to see this technical work extend into the North Coast region. It's really not a San Francisco estuary issue at all. It's a statewide issue. You know, at the WQCC last month, when all the regional board members and state board members get together, you know, I led a session on wetland restoration and how we board members serve a leadership role in the state to facilitate agencies coming together to get complex wetland and riparian restoration projects to happen with our regulatory and funding authorities. So this year, we hope to have representative board members and key staff from every regional board to form a statewide wetland restoration action plan. This is a voluntary initiative, but it obviously resonates with many of our programs and priorities. So, as usual, I'll organize my report according to budget issues and then recent activities and then upcoming activities at the State Board, and finally legislation, and the water bond will be that wrap up. You know, I reported last time on the difficulty of annually reviewing fee schedules to make sure we're able to fund our staff and our programs in water quality and water resource protection. And we raised fees for some programs in September. We lowered them for others. You know, the irrigated lands program fee remained unchanged, for instance. So as you know, we're a fee-supported agency according to the legislature's direction, and we use virtually no general funds to support our staff or contracts. I was briefed this week on progress on our state board's direction to staff to improve the fee-setting process with stakeholders to provide more information leading up to the budget decisions when they happen in May. The Division of Administrative Services of our boards, we met with Regional Board Dairy Program staff recently to discuss their participation in the proposed stakeholder process and to obtain information specific to each region's dairy program. In addition, members of the MCC, the Management Coordinating Committee, or all the EOs, all the executive officers, all the regional boards, discussed the dairy program at their October meeting and were requested to provide support for this stakeholder process, particularly in the programmatic aspects of these discussions. So our staff also met with many key dairy industry reps to discuss and get feedback on their expectations for the proposed stakeholder process and ways the dairy industry group could assist staff in improving this process. So we're trying to follow through on concerns about fees. You know, as part of the overall process for water quality and water rights fee stakeholders, we're working with our Office of Research, Planning, and Performance, ORPP, and they're the folks who really help us kind of organize information statewide and work on things like the conservation regulations on water efficiency in residential users of the state. So we're getting their expertise involved to help us improve this process, and we're going to have a general stakeholder webcast meeting on December 19th. To explain the annual budget process, how the upcoming stakeholder meetings will fit with that process, and a general discussion of what types of information will be presented at these meetings. So this is our best effort to further make this process more transparent. You know, and speaking of transparency, around this time, each year, we issue our annual performance report, which breaks down in great detail, regional board by regional board, division by division, program by program, the different targets of performance that all water boards set each year, and how well we do in reaching those quantifiable targets. This effort at greater transparency is intended to communicate to stakeholders how we spend the fees we collect. How many folks here have clicked on our website and seen the annual performance reports? Well, they haven't exactly gone viral. I admit. But it actually is quite user-friendly. It uses maps, attractive charts, tables, more charts than tables, to communicate the levels of staffing and funding in various programs like MPDS wastewater, stormwater, planning, irrigated lands, dairies, TMDLs, 401, CERTs, groundwater protection, site cleanups, and so on. And targets of permits, inspections, enforcement, and so on that are set in each program. And how much was completed in the last fiscal year. We also have report cards on water quality outcome in the TMDL program and are starting to develop report cards for environmental outcome and groundwater cleanups this year. We have one report card from San Diego region on a groundwater cleanup of regional significance. The State Board has encouraged a shift toward water quality outcome as well as program outputs to help ourselves and others evaluate how we're doing in the big picture. So on the 4th of this month, we had the 6th annual performance report. Overall, water boards achieved about 73% of the targets this year, a big improvement on last year's 49% and 60% of 2 years ago. You know, we heard this year about significant internal improvements to create less of a kind of a data entry middleman at the State Board. The goal of this is really to take the data management, the CWICS program, and have it more seamlessly translate to the performance report. And, you know, the intent of this system improvements are to answer questions that inevitably arise around issues like the fees and what the ratepayers and the permittees are receiving for these investments. We know we can improve some transparency, actually, the State Water Board, about our divisions and our outputs. It's a little different. It's not as easy to quantify in terms of outputs on permits and that sort of thing at the regional boards, but we're working on improving that. So, I would emphasize that in the end, this shift or, you know, inclusion of outcome as well as output is real important to us, I think I would imagine to you as well, and to the public, that these investments and the fees that pay for our staff resources ultimately result in improved water quality and water resource sustainability. So I encourage you to look at the performance report. It's a little icon on the home page. You click on there and you can go to your region, other regions. And then look at those report cards. They're very impressive. They show tables, you know, graphs of water quality over time and maps and monitoring locations, very relevant feedback on how we're doing. The good news is when we looked at 72 TMDLs around the state, half of them have been achieved or are showing measurable improvement toward achieving the TMDL. And then the other half, we're either not seeing as much improvement as we want, or it's hard to tell at this point. But that's a good news story. But to get to that point, there's a lot of work involved to really analyze where we are and do the monitoring, do the evaluation. And I just want to emphasize to everyone how important we think at the State Board outcome is in addition to output. You know, let's shift gears. Water conservation regulations, you might recall this summer we're in the news a lot, but not only for just the things average Californians shouldn't do as far as washing sidewalks with water and things like that. We set up a program with all the water utilities of the state to report on water use, and this is a new benchmark. It used to be voluntary with the Department of Water Resources, and when you have voluntary reporting, guess how much, you know, the average is as far as the data we receive. It's about 50 to 60%. When it's mandatory and required by regulation that we implemented, we get 99%. So really, now we have data on water use in the state that's unprecedented. As part of these emergency water conservation regulations, we updated the portal on our website last week, and it's the first link on the State Water Board homepage. It gets lots of media attention. Folks are independently analyzing these data and coming to their own conclusions. But for the first time, we've got statewide residential gallons per capita per day data that's comprehensive. And on November 4th, we received a report. Coastal areas like here have lower per capita water use, but many factors affect the data, and you can't compare the gallons per capita per day in vastly different hydrologic regions in California without considering many factors such as evapotranspiration, rainfall, population density, and land use characteristics like lot size. That said, the State Water Board believes that the information is useful for benchmarking for agencies, both for themselves and their neighbors. And the data are showing us what is possible in terms of per capita use in the various regions of the state. Areas of particular interest to the State Board are places where mandatory outdoor restrictions are not yet in place as required by the regulation, or where there's high per capita water use and not much reduction in use compared to 2013. So we're looking at these issues in a statewide context, but with all those caveats. You know, we're hearing many stories of heroic efforts of local agencies, including innovative programs of commercial residential turf removal that lead to permanent water demand reductions as a result of this drought. So you all heard about the California Water Action Plan. I've talked about it. We were involved in its development. It's the governor's Water Action Plan. And it calls for the water boards, in consultation with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, to develop flow water quality objectives in water quality control plans for 5 major rivers in the state in the next 5 years. These rivers have not been selected. I bring this up because the first step in developing minimum flow water quality objectives is to consider them in the basin plan triennial review. This process, along other water quality standard considerations. As we heard yesterday, you're doing this in the Eel, Navarro, and other rivers. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. On November 4th, we received the annual report on the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, the SRF. And it continues to have its AAA credit rating. And we are meeting our goals of moving hundreds of millions of dollars in low-interest loans and some principal forgiveness to communities throughout the state to fund wastewater and even some stormwater capture infrastructure improvements. About $8 million of the $570-odd million is for stormwater capture by a water agency in Orange County, but we're starting. A lot of the SRF challenge on stormwater relates to having a local revenue source, you know, that can be a guarantee to pay back the loan. Stormwater struggles because of the Prop 218 issues that you're familiar with. We continue to work on that aspect of it because stormwater, I'm a civil engineer. I've done stormwater and wastewater infrastructure renewal in Marin County and even Fort Bragg here in this region. And I'll tell you, stormwater, wastewater, it's the same kind of financial burden. And yet stormwater, because of the Prop 218, receives 10% of the available revenue. But from an infrastructure standpoint, they're equivalent. So this is an issue for California that's getting worked on, let's just say. And eventually we'll make it so stormwater infrastructure, drainage infrastructure, has the ability to raise funds at the local level on par with water and wastewater. Right now it's the orphan. On October 21st, we adopted the new drinking water SRF policy, now that we have our new division of drinking water. And that went very smoothly, benefiting from recent experience of the improvements of the clean water SRF, including better application and funding process that we revamped in May 2013. More and more, the SRF is an attractive funding mechanism for local governments to meet the water quality requirements of the water boards. The Division of Drinking Water is holding 6 workshops throughout the state to receive input on its update of the Safe Drinking Water Plan for California, as required by 1996 statute, SB 1307. The written comments are due December 15th. This plan is a comprehensive 270-page document that describes authorities, technical challenges to providing safe drinking water, financing options, how water is billed, how it's treated, source water protection, monitoring for chemicals and microbial agents, regional variabilities, regional vulnerabilities, regional governance, large and small public systems, private water systems, surface and groundwater, emergency preparedness, everything else. It is a great accomplishment, and it comes out of our talented drinking water division and all of their experience. A link can be found on the State Water Board website by clicking Drinking Water right there on the homepage and following links on this Safe Drinking Water Plan and public workshops. A workshop was held in Salinas on November 3rd, last week in Redding, and Los Angeles. There's 3 remaining workshops, and they can be attended via the web by these links on the website that I described. That's upcoming. Also upcoming, I should note that I'm going to be here in your region representing the North Coast region as its liaison, but on an issue that the State Board is the lead on, which is the frost protection regulations. Board member D.D. Diadamo, who's sort of the agricultural representative, or sort of is the agricultural representative on the State Water Board, and me, the liaison to the North Coast region, are attending a meeting at the Cloverdale Citrus Fairgrounds on Monday. It goes from 9 to noon, and it's on the frost water regulation and what it means for 2015. And we'll be supported, obviously, by State Water Board Water Rights Division. And the keystone of the frost protection regulations is the Water Demand Management Program. And it's really envisioned to be a flexible, purposefully vague approach so that it can be really calibrated to the local conditions, whether it's watershed, and ultimately watershed-based, but really tuned to the local landowners and how they interact and how they can set up a system to really be quantitative and careful so that they don't deplete water at critical times for aquatic resources, particularly salmonids. On October 1st, the Supreme Court of the state refused to hear an appeals decision on this regulation. So what we're doing at the State Water Board is we're kickstarting a process that was already underway in late 2011, looking at the 2012 frost season. That was set aside, and now we're just kickstarting this 3 years later, now that the matter of litigation and the matter of State Water Board authority is settled. So we look forward to working with them. And, I'll be bringing forward themes, really, that you all are promoting in your strategic plan, the idea of healthy watersheds, effective regulation, and strong partnerships. This fits really seamlessly with our philosophy and approach to implementing the frost regulations. And so we'll be bringing that attitude, on Monday, and looking forward to successful implementation of this program to protect water resources, water quality, and the economy of the agricultural industry here in the North Coast region. With the drought going on, there's 3 communities in California I'd like to briefly talk about. Crescent City, not as affected, by drought conditions, but constrained in its wastewater treatment capability. And you've been involved. You've had them under cease and desist order. They rebuilt their treatment plant with constrained site location using technology instead of land area to treat their wastewater. Well, it was very expensive, and we had a financing package in place that just wasn't economically sustainable. And so we took a step toward the community this week and approved financing at 0% going forward for the remaining 26 annual payments on a $44 million loan. But it's we meet the community halfway. They meet us by doing a graduated payment increase, 5% a year for 5 years, to create the revenue to pay back this loan to meet the regional board's wastewater treatment requirements. So, that's an interesting case because, you know, in the statewide context, we're looking at wastewater as a resource, right? Certainly in the drought period, we want to develop recycled water where possible. In a community like Crescent City, the recycled water doesn't solve a problem in the same way as it's doing today. Last week, I sat in a seven-hour meeting at the Central Coast Regional Board going through a process of approving emergency permits for the city of Cambria, which is north of Morro Bay. It's near San Simeon. They are about to run out of water. And in their case, recycled water is something that they can turn around and use, and the regional board has authorities to enable that process carefully. So you compare Cambria and Crescent City, the utility of wastewater as a resource is a different story. In the case of Cambria, I'll just point out, the third community is Willits that I'll talk about. So let's talk about Cambria real briefly. In their case, their drinking water well threatened to pull in seawater. They're at that point. They get refreshed by the local watershed, their well system. And so the solution's complex. It involves taking a wastewater pond, taking from a well near the wastewater pond, treating it highly, you know, with advanced oxidation, but also desalinating it, you know, RO, and then reinjecting it in that well field, creating a mound that staves off seawater intrusion, but, you know, beneficially reuses recycled water. You can imagine how many permits are involved, right? We can go into it. But I'll just suffice to say the regional board had to do a lot of work, right? We had groundwater protection for the brine storage. We had MPDS is working on a mitigation to replenish the lagoon, the coastal lagoon, estuarine lagoon that might be depleted. So there's three different permits, then let alone the discharge of recycled water, groundwater, and our division of drinking water that had to come in. And this was another benefit of having the division of drinking water involved. Why am I telling you about Cambria? Because this could happen in Willits. If this drought continues, and other places, Ukiah, in your region. So isn't it amazing? The North Coast region is just as diverse as the state of California itself, practically, in terms of its hydrology, you know, whether it's Crescent City or Willits or Ukiah. So I'm bringing this all up also in the context of the performance report. We talk about targets, you know, our bread and butter programs. The Central Coast region is not going to be able to meet certain targets and outputs because they've diverted staff to help a local community deal with a water supply emergency for the drought. I would not be surprised to see that happen in North Coast region as well, or many other regions, if this drought continues. So I thought it might be worth telling this story, that it takes creativity and a lot of work from the regional boards to help the state board and local communities be creative and get through the drought. I'm hopeful that these type of solutions can create a greater water supply portfolio for our local communities. And it does relate to that issue in Willits. And real briefly, you know, it's been in the papers, but yes, through our Division of Drinking Water, about 20 communities around the state, we've issued moratoriums to cities and communities for water hookups. And it's interesting, you know, through our curtailment process in the Water Rights Division, we were looking at holding hearings or doing curtailments and making health and safety exemptions for communities that are junior water rights holders, like Rio Del and Scotia was an example here in this region. But we realized that with the Division of Drinking Water, we have administrative authorities to issue moratoriums to get at the same issue. And so this was one of the benefits of combining with Drinking Water Division as far as our efficiency And so what it does is it compels local communities to do the same thing we otherwise would have, they would do or be empowered to do, which is to seek an alternative water supply when they only have a single sole source water supply. And that's the case in Willits. So I don't know any details of how they're looking at creative solutions as far as wastewater, as recycled water, or other things. But these are the kind of issues that I anticipate other your regional board and other regional boards may face. And then I encourage you to be responsive to our local communities. Okay. Sure.
Can I interrupt before you go?
At that point, I'll go to legislation.
What steps do you think we can do on a preventive level, either the staff or the board, to facilitate rapid responses for water shortage emergencies?
Well, you know, I would defer to your executive officer in some ways. You know, I really respect staff's understanding of the local community's needs and that sort of thing. You know, but let's hold that thought. Maybe okay. You can speak to that a little bit. I'll move through legislation quickly. Yeah, I mentioned last, I don't want to overlook the importance of our underground tank program. When I have a chance, the SB 445 legislation, I might have mentioned it last time, but this extends our program 10 years, increases the fee on petroleum stored in underground storage tanks. It dedicates part of the assessed fee to cleaning up contaminated sites without regard to the source of the contamination, and especially when there's no viable responsible parties. It requires all single-walled underground storage tanks to be permanently closed by the end of 2025, and it provides the State Water Board with the necessary authority to prevent fraud in the cleanup fund. These were items that we've been asking for years, and with this legislative session, unprecedented, we really were fortunate to have a lot of water issues addressed, and this was one of them, and so just encourage your staff to stay plugged in. The only thing I'll say about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, since we covered it in great detail last time, is that I attended an event in Stanford on October 20th with Jerry Brown, did speak. You know, what he said about water is it's water's complicated. The more you look, the more more there is. I love that quote. It's complicated. The more you look, the more there is. There's no one size fits all in our state, and every community is going to have its unique issues. But, a great point that our governor made during this speech was the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act makes it possible, gives credibility to the prospect of using groundwater basins as storage. Without those protections to keep, there's nothing to prevent the neighbor from depleting the water that you beneficially stored until this act has been put into place. And so it was really great to hear the governor point that out and just throw his full support behind the Groundwater Act. So that leads us to the water bond. I handed out the sheet on this, and so we'll go line by line, obviously, but you note that the red ink has been used for things that are explicitly for State Water Board. So we talk about the $7.5 billion bond, right? Well, think of it in terms of maybe the 7,500, just to, let's take a few zeros off. So you have a bank account with $7,500. About $2,300, about a third of it or so, is under the State Water Board's authority to work on in cooperation with the regional boards. And the Chapter 5, a lot of our activity is going to be in the clean, safe, and reliable drinking water area, about $260 million in the small community grant fund, dealing with more of the wastewater side, and then $260 million in the public water system improvements to the Division of Drinking Water. And we'll be involved in the groundwater sustainability aspect, which is almost $1 billion, about $900 million. So the $900 of the $7,500 will be toward preventing contamination of groundwater that serves as drinking water, and some treatment and remediation, and some development and implementation of groundwater plans and projects. So we're going to be involved in that challenge. But also, Chapter 9, water recycling, It's about $725 out of the $7,500. So that's about 10% on water recycling development. And I think Cambria is one example of many where we're really showing our ability to move quickly to assist communities in getting recycled water up and running. We also did our recycled water order in June to facilitate all farms in the state to be able to use recycled water. So that's, you know, if the drought continues and we really start, and then hundreds of thousands of people are out of water instead of thousands, and we get to hundreds of thousands of people out of water, we're going to be really emphasizing conservation and recycling to get us through each year until it starts to rain normally. And I'll say on the drought, we had an extensive, on Tuesday, extensive review of drought conditions from the Department of Water Resources. And just emphasize to Californians that at this time, because of the antecedent conditions and the groundwater depletions that have occurred, basically precipitation and runoff have been decoupled in most of the state. There are some exceptions in this region. What that means is it rains and the water disappears in the ground and it doesn't show up in the rivers. And it's going to take about 25% additional rainfall this year to have the runoff conditions that you'd expect. So as the drought continues, precipitation and runoff become further decoupled. And it's a serious issue. So it just emphasizes how important it is for us to conserve water and be creative and think in an integrated fashion. As you look at your basin plan, the Central Coast Regional Board is doing its triennial review as well. One of the narratives that you may consider is inclusion of a recognition of integrated water management in Chapter 4 implementation. I just throw that out there. Central Coast is doing it. It's not one of those things that needs a great deal of, it's not really a regulatory change per se, but it recognizes efforts you already have underway in Sonoma and in your integrated regional water management programs throughout your region. And I think it's helpful to help us recognize and empower multi-benefit projects wherever we can for people and the ecosystem that sustains us. And with that, I'll finally conclude my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any board member questions or comments? Okay, I just, go ahead.
Steve, thank you. As always, incredibly thorough and thoughtful presentation. I really do look forward to your work and how seriously you take it in being a liaison. There's just one thing I wanted to share with you. I'm always intrigued following a vote on a statewide proposition. I always look for breakdown of votes by county. And I don't know if you've done that for our region, but it was regarding Prop 1. It was interesting that I looked at it last week. Only Sonoma County in our region passed. The majority of folks voted to pass Prop 1. All the other counties did not support it. It wasn't a landslide, but... And the few folks that I've talked to, it's obviously not a huge poll, but I think a lot of people didn't feel connected to Prop 1 and looked at it as a Central Valley proposition, a Southern California proposition. Uh-huh. And the issue of drought is resonating differently across our landscape, certainly Willits, as you said, and I thought the example of Crescent City was perfect. But I just found it interesting, the breakdown of how people view, you know, this measure as addressing their local problems, and didn't seem to resonate very strong with our local residents. I just shared that with you, and I always enjoy looking at those demographics and breakdowns of votes across jurisdictional boundaries.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. I'm not surprised, and it is a popularly held belief, you know, that this was the Delta fix and that sort of thing. Fortunately, the leadership at Department of Water Resources, ourselves, we're very cognizant of the statewide needs and will be strident in making sure all the state benefits from this bond. And for instance, the storage thing. So we talk about $7,500, right? $2,700 of the $7,500 is for storage. Is that just reservoirs? No. We're very clear that now that we have the Groundwater Act, that means storage and groundwater and development of projects to do that, to do stormwater capture like you heard about yesterday from Sonoma. So we're going to be very careful to make sure the whole state benefits.
Any other board member comment or question? I just wanted to direct to staff that maybe we look at some of the other regional boards that have gone through emergencies and just pick up lessons learned and how we can be agile and move forward if we should face that.
Well, I can mention a couple of things that we did this past year with regard to addressing water supplies and drought. Created a permitting mechanism for the city of Healdsburg for use of recycled water to be trucked for agricultural use. So that's, you know, promoting efficient and protective use of recycled water where appropriate. In that same regard, we worked with the timber industry and Cal Fire to use recycled water where possible for dust control on forest roads, because that's a huge use of water on our timber landscape in the North Coast that's typically just drawn from surface water. So looking at alternative sources of water to keep that water in the creeks. And then just, this is not an action that we've taken, but I think that providing financial incentives for water conservation through fee structures. One thing that we're, staff are contemplating as we're developing our agricultural permits, including the marijuana discharge regulation permit, is including requirements for water conservation as part of those permitting actions. So that's new for the state, frankly. In addition, you heard yesterday about aquifer storage and recovery projects within the Russian River watershed, as well as promoting capture of stormwater for promoting stormwater recharge to groundwater. So things that we can do are to help permit and make those projects move forward. And then the last thing that I'd say is just to do the work that we're charged with doing, which is to protect groundwater quality. And the North Coast is blessed with having high-quality groundwater, and it's important. And that's a supply, obviously, for drinking water. And so we want to keep that groundwater of high quality, and so maintaining protections within our permits to keep our groundwater clean and available for drinking water.
No, it's great. I did note the aquifer storage and recovery elements, and that relates to protecting groundwater. Just would point you to the statewide permit that was adopted by the State Board. And we worked closely with Central Valley Region on development of that permit to make sure it's protective. And then there's this opportunity with Division of Drinking Water to come in fairly efficiently to help us through this public health protection aspects.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next item, I believe, is public forum. And if